Alutamare, the supreme creator, looked upon the primordial earth and emanated 17 primordial spirits, the Urunmale, sending them down from the heavens to turn the barren rock into a paradise. 16 of these spirits were men. The 17th was a woman wrapped in robes the color of marigolds and brass. Born directly from the divine mind of the supreme source, her name was Oshun. When they landed, the male spirits immediately huddled together. They built councils, drew up plans for kingdoms, and began clearing the land. They ignored Oshun completely. They didn't consult her. They didn't give her a seat at the table. To them, she was simply a woman, a decorative observer. Oshun didn't bother to argue, and she didn't rage. She simply smiled. She stepped back and withdrew her energy from the world. Oshun went to the moon, where she lounged and admired herself in the mirror. And silently, the world began to die. The seeds that the male spirits planted rotted in the dirt. The clouds turned to stone and refused to drop rain. The soil cracked like broken pottery. Women became barren. Animals stopped reproducing. And a terrible, dusty stillness settled over the earth. No matter what rituals or sacrifices the male spirits performed, the cosmos refused to answer. Desperate and starving, the male deities flew back up to the heavens to beg Alutamare for answers. "We did everything you commanded," they cried. "Why is the earth dying?" Alutamare says, "Did you include Oshun?" The male spirits looked at each other in shame. "No," they admitted. "She is just one woman. Well, without her, nothing can be birthed, and without her, there is no sweetness, no flow, and no creation. Go back and beg her forgiveness, and do whatever she asks." The male spirits hurried back to Earth. They bowed before Oshun, offering her gold, honey, and their absolute reverence. They pleaded with her to save the world. Oshun looked at them, tasted the honey that they offered, and softened. She stepped into the dried-up riverbed. As her feet touched the dust, a torrent of cool, sweet, life-giving water burst forth. Rain tore through the sky. The fields exploded into green, and the first human heartbeats echoed across the earth. Oshun had saved humanity. She didn't just give life. She proved that without the sacred feminine, the universe simply cannot function. That story, the myth of the creation and the 17 Urunmale, comes straight from the oldest oral histories of West Africa. It sets the stage for exactly who Oshun is. In Yoruba cosmology, Alutamare maintains close contact with creation through the Orishas. Think of them not as distant abstract gods, but as deified ancestors or direct expressions of the single divine consciousness. Alutamare gave them their unique domains by casting various powers into the earth. Whichever Orisha caught a certain power became its guardian. Shango became the lord of lightning and fire. Isu became the lord of crossroads and messages, and Opatala took the sky. But what about Oshun? Her lineage and her realm reflect a beautiful, shifting tapestry depending on where the stories are told. In the oldest West African Ifa texts, Oshun has no biological parents. She is a primordial creation birthed directly from the cosmic source before time even began. However, because she was the youngest of the Orishas, she initially had no realm of her own, while the older spirits claimed the fire, the sky, and even the metals. As these stories crossed the Atlantic into the diaspora, a deeply maternal lineage took root. Here, Oshun is celebrated as the cherished younger sister or the daughter of Yamaya, the great maternal Orisha of the deep, salty oceans. This relationship is a stunning symbolic partnership. Yamaya represents the vast primordial oceans, while Oshun takes that water and she refines it into the sweet, flowing, fresh waters that humans can actually drink to survive. The river is Oshun's physical dress. The fresh water is her very blood. And it was Yamaya who actually gave Oshun her home. According to the Itan, or sacred history, Oshun was wandering the earth one day when her breathtaking beauty caught the eye of Ogun, the fierce Orisha of metallurgy. As he pursued her, Oshun fled, accidentally slipping into a rushing river. Whirling away downstream, she was rescued by Yamaya, who gently handed her the sovereignty of all sweet waters and rivers, ensuring that she would always have a safe royal sanctuary to call her own. So in the wider history of the Orishas, Oshun is a towering royal figure. First and foremost, she's a royal consort. She is famously known as the favorite wife of Shango, the god of thunder. Their relationship is a cosmic dance of fire and water, passion and strategy. She's also linked to Shango's other wives, Oba and Oya, in tales that humanize the deities. In one famous story, a jealous Oshun tricked Oba into cutting off her own ear to cook for Shango. It's a story that beautifully harmonizes Oshun, showing that even the most benevolent deities have their flaws, encouraging us to forgive our own human failings. Oshun is also considered to be the mother of twins. Oshun is the proud mother of the Ibeji, the sacred twins, and in Yoruba culture, twins share a singular divine soul, and Oshun is the eternal protector. Oshun is also the queen of kings. In the historical Oyo Empire, Oshun was revered as an actual historic queen consort who was later deified by her people. She is traditionally depicted wearing heavy brass jewelry, carrying a circular fan as well, and holding a mirror. That mirror in particular is not about vanity. It's a spiritual tool that represents self-awareness. It represents truth and the power to look past illusions to see the soul. This is the story of Oshun, the river that learned to listen. Before the rivers learned to whisper prophecies, Oshun often wandered to the edge of Orunila's sacred grove. There, beneath the shade and the grand Iroko tree, she would hear the soft rhythm of palm nuts striking the earth and the murmured verses of Ifa carried on the wind. She didn't interrupt. She just simply listened. Day after day, while others believed that beauty was her greatest gift, Oshun gathered something far more precious. She learned that every fallen leaf held a story. Every ripple upon her river carried an answer. And every silence between the verses spoke louder than words. One evening, when the moon hung like polished ivory above the water, Orunila, the master of destiny, noticed her waiting. "You've come again," he said. "I've come to understand," Oshun replied. He smiled, for wisdom always recognizes itself. "Many seek power," he said, "but few seek truth." He placed the sacred palm nuts into her hands. The moment they touched her skin, the river around them grew completely still. The stars reflected perfectly upon its surface until heaven and water became indistinguishable. Oshun cast the nuts, and though she had never done so before, the patterns unfolded before her like currents that she'd always known. The verses didn't merely just enter her ears. They flowed through her heart as naturally as water finding its course. From that night onward, those who came to Oshun seeking love often left with something greater. They came asking who they would marry, how to gain wealth, or whether fortune smiled upon them. Instead, Oshun first taught them to listen, for the sweetest waters reveal not what we wish to hear, but what our souls have been whispering all along. To understand Oshun completely, we have to look at the religious framework that cradles her. Originally, she belongs to Ashushe, a the traditional indigenous religion of the Yoruba people, which translates beautifully to the origin of our traditions. But today, Oshun's name is sung in Miami, Havana, Rio de Janeiro, and New York. How did a West African river goddess become a spiritual global icon? The answer, of course, lies in one of the most painful yet profoundly resilient chapters in human history, the transatlantic slave trade. When millions of Yoruba people were violently enslaved and brought to the Americas, they were stripped of everything except their identities. They carried the Orishas safely inside their minds and in their bodies. To survive the brutal colonial suppression of their faith, they practiced an ingenious form of spiritual camouflage called syncretism. They visually hid their deities behind Catholic saints. In Cuba, this evolved into Santeria, where Oshun was synchronized with Our Lady of Charity. In Brazil, it became Candomblé, where she is loved as Oxum. And in the Protestant United States, she was often subtly woven into the devotion to Mother Mary. To understand the psychology of the people who kept her alive, we do have to look at the cosmology of the calabash, a sacred dried gourd split horizontally into two halves. The top half of the gourd is Orun, the spiritual realm of the ancestors and Orishas. The bottom half is Aya, the tangible physical world that we inhabit. Traditional believers don't see a harsh separation between the holy and the everyday. Nature is alive. The goal of human life is to achieve Iwapele, good balanced character, so that our physical lives align beautifully with our spiritual destinies. Oshun is the ultimate mediator. She flows seamlessly between the top and the bottom of the calabash using her charm, diplomacy, and deep wisdom to soothe human sufferings. So how do we actually know about Oshun? Unlike Western religions, the Oshushe don't rely on written books. Instead, it rests upon a massive system of oral poetry called the Ifa Corpus. This corpus is divided into 256 volumes called the Odu, containing thousands of verses called Esha. For centuries, holy priests called Babalawos memorized these intricate poems with flawless precision. It's so culturally profound that UNESCO has designated the Ifa system as a masterpiece of the oral and intangible heritage of humanity. But a major shift happened when European colonizers and missionaries arrived in West Africa in the 19th and the 20th centuries. When they witnessed the worship of Oshun, they viewed her through a heavily distorted patriarchal lens. Because European empires prioritized control, hierarchy, and male dominance, they were deeply uncomfortable with a spiritual world where a woman would hold absolute cosmic power over life, wealth, and diplomacy. In colonial diaries and even in missionary reports, Oshun was frequently reduced to a so-called primitive fertility idol or dismissed as a frivolous water spirit. Writers focused entirely on her sensuality using words like vain or hedonistic to describe her rituals. By narrowing the lens solely to her sexuality, colonial accounts attempted to strip Oshun of her political authority, her role as a military defender of cities, and her position as a master diviner. What they couldn't comprehend was that in the Yoruba worldview, sensuality and holiness are not considered to be enemies. They are both pure, beautiful expressions of the life force. As history began to be written down under British colonial influence, a distinct patriarchal bias crept in. Some versions of the myths were subtly altered to imply that female spirits failed when they act without male leadership. But the surviving authentic oral verses of Ifa tell the true story. The Orishas themselves could be jealous, they could be spiteful, or even arrogant, and periodically even plotted to rebel against Olodumare. Interestingly enough, the one Orisha who is never mentioned amongst the rebellious plots is Oshun. In fact, when the other Orishas grew arrogant and tried to run the world without the creator, it was Oshun who had to step up, and she had to save them all. The rivers had forgotten how to sing. Their beds crack beneath an unforgiving sun, and the fish lay silent upon the dust, and children looked into empty wells that reflected only the dry sky. The Orishas knew why. Dissatisfied with the supreme source, they had stopped obeying. In response, Olodumare didn't strike back with anger, but with absence. He simply closed the heavens, and the rainfall stopped. Recognizing their mistake, the Orishas cried out for forgiveness, but the heavens were too high, and Olodumare could not or would not hear them. One by one, the mighty male Orishas attempted to fly up to reach their creator, yet the sky stretched farther than even their immense strength could carry them. Then Oshun stepped forward. Laughter greeted her from the weary gods. "What can delicate hands accomplish where warriors have failed?" they muttered. She answered with neither pride nor bitterness, and instead, she transformed. Brilliant feathers blossomed across her body until she became a magnificent peacock, radiant as a sunrise upon flowing water. With one powerful sweep of her wings, she climbed into the endless sky, carrying the weight of the world's repentance. Higher and higher she flew, and the wind began to grow thin. Her jeweled feathers began to drift away like forgotten dreams, but still she climbed. The sun burned so fiercely that every vibrant color upon her wings turned to ash. Her crown vanished. Her graceful form darkened until the beautiful peacock was no more. Only a weathered suit-covered vulture remained. Exhausted beyond measure and her body burning, Oshun reached the threshold of Orun and collapsed straight into the creator's waiting hands. Olodumare looked upon the weary blackened bird and saw not what she had lost, but what she had willingly surrendered. "You flew farther than strength alone could carry. You were carried by love." He healed her and immediately released the rains upon the earth. Clouds gathered, thunder rolled, and the rivers awoke. Before Oshun departed, Olodumare touched the singed feathers of the humble vulture and declared the following: "From this day forward, you shall be the only Orisha always welcome to deliver messages to my dwelling. Those who judge only by beauty will never understand that the greatest glory belongs to the one willing to sacrifice it for others." And so the old storytellers say that the peacock and the vulture both belong to Oshun, reminding us that true beauty is found in the courage to endure. Despite centuries of colonialism and the Middle Passage, Oshun's waters never dried up. She remains a deep, compassionate, merciful deity who is explicitly sympathetic to the difficulties of human transitions, griefs, and the struggles of starting a new life. Today, millions of people call on her for fertility and conception. She is the gentle patroness of expectant mothers and reproductive health. Millions of people call on her for love and reconciliation. She is the one who heals broken hearts, and she sweetens the bitter, toxic environment. Millions of people call upon her for wealth and abundance. She is known as the Lady of Gold, historically brass and copper, the rarest metals of the ancient times. She also governs the financial flow and good fortune. She is also called upon for justice and protection. When her people are threatened, she becomes a fierce defender. In the 1840s, when her sacred city of Oshagbo was threatened by war, oral history says that Oshun transformed into a food vendor, feeding the invading army a meal that completely neutralized them, saving her city from destruction. However, because she rules the fresh waters, she can also show a fierce, destructive side if humanity offends her through carelessness, cruelty, or even disrespect for nature. She can withhold her rains to cause a drought. She can send an unending deluge to flood the land. Her actions are always a mirror reflecting the behavior of the people back at them. If you want to honor Oshun, traditional offerings, which are called Adimu, they're always marked by beauty, sweetness, and the color yellow. Certain offerings to consider would be honey, which is her absolute favorite, but take note of a vital piece of protocol. Tradition dictates that a devotee must always taste the honey in front of her before offering it, a ritual that's stemming from an old myth to prove that the offering isn't poisoned. She also likes pumpkins and squash, symbolizing wealth and the warmth of the womb. Sweet oranges, chamomile, and sunflowers. Brass bells, mirrors, and amber beads, animals, and nature. She is spiritually tied to the playful otter, the self-determined skunk, the fertile bee, and the butterfly. To this day, her heart remains at the Osun Oshogbo Sacred Grove in Nigeria, which is a stunning protected UNESCO World Heritage forest that's filled with shrines, rivers, and monumental artworks. Every year during the Osun Oshogbo Festival, pilgrims gather at the river's edge. They're dancing, they're singing, and pouring libations into the sweet current, crying out the following: Hail the sweet, benevolent mother. As we close our journey today, let's kind of step away from the historical facts and look at the spiritual blueprint that Osun leaves for us. Osun teaches us a revolutionary lesson about power. In a world that so often insists that power must be loud, aggressive, muscular, and destructive to be respected, Osun offers a beautiful alternative. Her power is the power of the river. Think about a rushing river. It doesn't break a boulder by hitting it with a hammer. It flows around it smoothly, beautifully, and patiently. Yet over time, that soft water, it ends up carving out the Grand Canyon. It literally shapes the face of the earth. And that is the power of Osun. The power of gentleness, of diplomacy, of strategy, and of absolute unyielding persistence. She reminds us that sweetness is not weakness. To be kind, to bring beauty into a harsh world, to heal a broken heart, and to create life in a barren place. These require an inner strength that brute force can never replicate. When life feels dry, rigid, or full of conflict, perhaps we all need to channel a bit of Osun. We need to step back, find our flow, taste the sweetness, and remember that we carry the power to bring life back to our own dry ground.